This TFMR podcast is brought to you by your friends at JM Bullion. Visit jmbullion.com for all your gold and silver bullion needs. Well, greetings out there to everybody at TFMR. Guess what? Since it's Thursday, it must be time for another Thursday conversation. And this is one I'm very much looking forward to sharing with you. Of course, as you know, I've got a little working vacation this week. And so this Thursday conversation is actually being recorded on Monday, the 21st. It's a little bit like a COT report where everything is surveyed on Tuesday at 1:30, and then you don't get the information until 74 hours later, Friday at 3:30. That's about how this is going to work out from the time we're recording this to the time it's going to get posted. So understand that that's the timeline of this discussion. And as you've already seen, this discussion is with Tavi Costa. Tavi, as you know, or maybe don't know, is a portfolio manager at Crescat Capital in Denver. I first got to know Tavi by following him on Twitter, which I would encourage you to do. And I'll have him share his Twitter handle in a minute. But it's been great to get to know him over the last year because, man, he's adding a lot and helping a lot in the sector and is a wise and knowledgeable guy. And I'm glad to have him as a friend of the site. So Tavi, thank you so much for spending a few minutes with me.
Hi, Craig. It's always a pleasure to talk to you and thanks for having me here.
Hey, as I said, hit everybody with that Twitter handle because that's the first thing they can do if they want to keep in touch with what you're putting out there.
Well, thanks for allowing me to share that. My Twitter handle is at Tavi Costa.
That's pretty simple, right?
Yeah.
T-A-V-I-C-O-S-T-A.
Yeah.
Perfect. All right. And then tell everybody a little bit about Crescat because I know several people that you work with, like Dr. Henney often works with you guys on some of the projects that you're looking at and developing and that sort of thing. But what is Crescat? And if for the people that qualify, how can they get involved with you guys?
Sure. I'll give you a very brief background about Crescat. We started really in the 90s with a lot of much on the side of the value approach, using a lot of the quant models that Kevin was building at the time in order to really pick and choose stocks in a universe of companies throughout the world. And then back in 2006, we launched the Global Macro Hedge Fund. It became more of a global macro shop. A lot of the themes in our funds were coming out from those quant models, which was kind of the interesting part. When I joined the firm in 2012 or so, I started really using the same principles of the value investing in quant models we've had on the macro side. I think that was the evolvement where Crescat became more of a macro shop. And then back in 2019, in the end of 2018, we've had very strong views about the precious metals space. And so we launched a separate managed account for even folks that want to invest as low as $25,000 and were not credited. And we still have that strategy, by the way.
Okay.
And over time, we decided to, as we digged into the industry and really decided to understand what was happening, we did a partnership with Quentin Haney, which I think is the smartest geologist in exploration side in the world today. To really create this other hedge fund where we fund a lot of mining companies, especially in exploration and discovery phase. So that's really a brief background about Crescat.
Tavi, hit us with the website for your company.
Oh, sure. Our website is crescat.net. You can also find us on Twitter or YouTube. We do weekly presentations on companies we get involved. Pretty easy to find us.
All right, my friend, there's a couple of things I want to ask you about. We always try to do these Thursday conversations kind of in three sections. And the first section I want to ask you about is everything that happened last week. Now, again, I'll remind everyone, we're recording this on Monday. You're listening to it on Thursday. So there's been a lot of stuff that has happened even this week that Tavi and I don't know about as we're recording this. But last week was quite a bit of cold water dumped on the sector. On a lot of commodities in general, with a big spike in the dollar. What do you make of all this? One, the transitory inflation stuff, but two, I mean, maybe an unintended consequence or intended consequence of Powell raising that interest on excess reserves and suddenly actively draining liquidity from the system. Just your thoughts on what we saw last week and how it all might play out in the weeks ahead.
Sure. I would say the highlight of the week of last week was really at the beginning when Paul Tudor Jones started the week by seems to be very much on the inflation side of the of what's happening in the markets today, and became sort of a consensus trade, and everyone was waiting for the Fed statement. And if they stay on path, you know, he was going to go all in on the inflation trade. What happened since then was that the Fed was a little more hawkish relative to other statements. And it's funny that, you know, we call even Bullard's comments on Friday, which really was what turned the whole market around as well, was it's crazy to think that an inflation forecast from his side of a 2.5% for the end of 2022 is considered hawkish today. I think that what's going on with the market right now, we're at a very oversold levels. I mean, if you look at the RSI for 9 days in the mining space or just the mining companies or gold or silver, you can clearly see that we are at those stages. I believe strongly we're still in a secular bull market for precious metals. And for me, those pullbacks are the times when investors really are well rewarded in this market. So I think nothing has really changed. I mean, the Federal Reserve is keeping their own the same policy hasn't really changed. The $80 billion of Treasury purchases on top of the $40 billion of mortgage-backed securities that hasn't really changed. It's almost like the Fed is thinking about going on a diet or starting a diet 2 years from now. And so I think this is still overall very bullish for tangible assets as a whole.
The bond market reaction is the thing that has me most, I don't want to say confused, but I guess confused, because here they are. I mean, is the bond market that forward looking that they're taking into account, you know, maybe some, I guess that dynamic of an economy 2 years from now, or I guess they're looking at it and thinking, well, maybe it's not going to be that dynamic. Maybe that's what I'm getting at, is that, you know, that's going to be deflationary 2 years from now. These kind of cross currents in the reaction is what I find so intriguing.
Yeah, I would say that the bond market reaction may be not the best way to really be looking at this, given the fact of level of manipulation by the Federal Reserve. I mean, they now own basically 30% of treasury bonds and notes. Those are more longer duration instruments. The Fed recently has expanded its balance sheet by, you know, last week by the largest amount since March. And so we're clearly seeing this narrative going from tapering to yield curve control again, looks like, at least from their actions, in my opinion. And so again, this is all, you know, the Federal Reserve, as I said before, is trapped, but really has two options here. It can allow the market to have its reckoning moment, where we're seeing this reality facing prices that are, in my opinion, in la la land in a lot of asset classes, from the equity side, from corporate bond side to, you know, sovereign bonds and so forth, even housing market in some regions. And by doing that would be by raising rates and having cost of capital reaching levels that used to be in the past normal. I don't believe that a lot of those markets should be where they are, at least trading at record levels relative to where, you know, the cost of capital could have been. Now, the other way around this is that why they're trapped is that they're just feeding into this inflationary situation where clearly money printing along with other policies, especially on the fiscal side, are creating a lot of inflationary pressure and starting to increase commodity prices and everything that we see. It's funny that we're all seeing now on the news that commodity prices are collapsing, while really we're only going back to levels that we were about 3 months ago. So we're still, you know, you look at lumber prices in the quarterly basis going back to the 90s or 80s. If you're free to chart that, and you see clearly that, you know, regardless of the 50% retracement we had recently here on that chart, we're still well above any other time in history. So You know, I think they're going to take the inflation route, in my opinion, and I'm referring to the Federal Reserve. And so that's why I think it's important to have inflation hedges in your portfolio for the following years.
You mentioned the markets being overvalued by any measure they are, just the general stock market and sectors within. But man, you do great work pointing out the relative valuations and the undervaluation of the mining sector. Now, again, that's nothing new, right? If we've been in, anybody been in the mining sector for the last decade, they know how that works. But after last week, could you kind of, I don't know, I guess it's reassuring to hear some of that, some of those data points. Can you lay some of that on us about the sector in general?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things that are, outstanding about this industry, which the nice thing about it is the skepticism that still remains very much the prevailing narrative in space. And, you know, as you become constructive in gold and silver prices, you obviously go up on the risk curve and start buying into the mining companies. And in my opinion, what I find interesting is that the fundamentals of those companies have never been so great. Margins have been improving significantly. It's the first time we're going on a straight 5 quarters already that we reported a positive free cash flow on a median basis for U.S. and Canadian companies in the mining space of precious metals. And so when you look at the free cash flow yield for those companies, about 70% of them are actually profitable on a free cash flow basis. We're also seeing an incredible improvement in balance sheets with companies using a large portion of their free cash flow generation actually to pay down debt, something we didn't see in 2011, where they're actually leveraging up rather than paying down debt. And so those are all parts of the thesis for why we think this is not only a value play, but also embedded with a lot of growth. We see triple digit numbers in terms of free cash flow growth for most of the companies. If you look at on a median basis, again, for the U.S. And Canadian companies, our top 50 by market cap, you see clearly that those companies are growing free cash flow like never before. On an aggregate basis, if you just aggregate all the free cash flow for the top 50 miners, you see the same thing. It's a chart that looks like a tech company chart in terms of prices going parabolic higher. And so I really think that it's this skepticism is not really justified by what we're actually seeing. And this is usual because I don't think people are really doing their homework and really digging deep into what we find here in terms of the opportunity. So there is also an issue, as you know very well, Craig, with their reluctance to really spend capital in general. None of those companies want to spend money on CapEx infrastructure or buying new projects. And we're not in the M&A area yet. There's not much going on in terms of merger and acquisitions of companies in the space. So I find this all the signs of very early innings in the secular bull market for the precious metals companies. And so, yes, I'm very excited about this. And I think it's all going to fall into the discovery and exploration side of the industry, where there's not much smart money into that part of the space, and really helps to be able to navigate that side of the market if you're capable to do so. And so that's really where the focus has been, because there's a, as they deplete the reserves, and I'm talking about the major companies in the mining space, they're going to be looking for new projects to really increase and expand their pipelines of production. And so, with the lack of discoveries of gold and silver in the last 3 years or so, there is going to be a massive need for new projects that are profitable and economically viable. So this is where we want to be.
Are you sensing much interest yet? I mean, at the institutional level, I mean, is it going to take kind of a rotation out of, you know, really hot growth of general equities into more of a value? Or is it going to take a new surge in commodities to generate that interest? What are you sensing as like a sentiment at this point?
I think it's definitely going to take a new surge in commodity prices first. But I use as an example what was my conversation with a lot of the major companies, from royalties to major producers in the space. and asking them about copper projects at the time, which was back in 2020, right about middle part of 2020, when copper was relatively, you know, way cheaper than where it is today. And my question was, is there any interest in buying copper projects? And the interest was zero. So as copper prices increase, those companies are now all starting to get interested in copper projects, which is not the right way to invest. You want to buy low and sell high, not the other way around. But I still like copper projects, by the way, but I just find it interesting that they wait until the prices increase first to then be started to become more interested in those types of investments. And the same question was asked from our side to those major companies recently about exploration projects. And a lot of those companies cannot justify to their shareholders spending money on projects that are not generating free cash flow today. The generation of actual, you know, profitability of projects as a whole is a new thing. I mean, we're, you know, and a huge part of why we are in the early innings of this cycle. But, you know, this is still the case. And those guys are not really being capable of spending money on things that could be incredibly profitable and help them to become company makers types of projects in the space. So I think it's going to take another leg up here in commodity prices as a whole. You know, for us, it's astonishing to see the profitability in the space, while really, as I like to say, the party hasn't really started yet. Right. Silver price is still, you know, sub $30 an ounce. Wait right. until that gets above 50 or so. You know, how much money are those guys going to be making? So I think, you know, still early. And for me, it's, you know, the wide opportunity lies ahead.
All right, Tavi, let's have a little fun here in the final part of this discussion. I've made just this year quite a few profits, because I should just say paper profits, because I'm not sure I've really sold anything yet. You turned me on to a name called Eloro, not personally, just through your Twitter feed. That's been fantastic. You know, talking with Dr. Henny or with Eric about what's going on in Newfoundland and in some of the other spots that you and Dr. Henny have kind of gotten excited about. I just kind of want to talk to you about some of the stuff you're doing in that hedge fund, but then also in some of your other funds. Like, again, let's start with Eloro, because that's one I'd never even heard of. It's down there, what, in Colombia?
That one is up in Bolivia. Yes. And it's going to be another one of those, probably one of the largest silver discoveries in history, but it also has a lot of tin. It's really a polymetallic deposit, where, you know, we have one of the smartest geologists in the space as well, working on that project, called Osvaldo. We've worked with the CEO, Tom Larson, very closely, became very early investors back when it was about 20 million market cap, or even lower than that, I believe. And so Crescat holds a very significant position in that company. It's one of those that are going to be likely a very profitable and economically viable deposit that could become a company maker for the majors. So we like that as one of our big companies. There are really a lot of other companies we're excited about. And I think that the one that we're mostly excited about, since our views about VMS deposits being probably one of the most profitable ones that you can find, are, you know, really SK Mining in the Golden Triangle. It's an even safer or much safer jurisdiction, but also the optionality of having so many targets in a 500 square meter deposit property, where we think that it's, they're really onto the SK Creek number two. But really, when you start really looking at a lot of the geological work they've done so far, it really feels like they could have multiple Aske Creeks in that company, in that property. And so, you know, when you think about this and you look at the market cap of the company, still, you know, significantly lower than Skeena Resources, which is also, you know, an interesting play. You start thinking about the optionality on Aske Mining. We think it's going to be a multi-bagger from here. It's one of our largest investments. Other companies that we like in other also interesting jurisdictions would be New Legacy, is a company internally. We score that very highly. We think they're after the post Betsy deposit, where I think it's going to be a real a massive system and also profitable. Nothing has been proven yet, but it's still an early stage story that we like to be involved in a very large way. We like the team. We think they're onto something really big. The other one would be Firefox, Firefox Gold, which is in Finland. It's another one that, you know, now given, as you know very well, Newfoundland is the new area where the new region where everyone is excited about, especially Newfound Gold, as the deposit has, you know, reminds a lot of people of the Fosterville deposit. Well, guess what? Firefox is onto something very similar in our opinion, but in Finland. So it's a company that we like to be very involved. We have a very large stake as well. Aside from all the companies we're involved in Newfoundland as well, from Newfound Gold, from Maritime to Labrador, we have very large positions in all those companies too. So we're really excited about what we're building. And our goal is to really build district plays. Now, I'm happy to share more names, but those would be some of the names just to give you some of the flavor of what we're working on.
I've kind of there have been a number of CEOs I've had and been able to host on the site here lately. And I'm trying to there was one that I think you guys were kind of looking at and Dr. Henny was looking at. And then they weren't able to get involved too early called, I think it was it Gold Mountain? Does that one sound familiar?
Yes. Yeah, we got involved with them. Not, I would say still prior, believe it was prior IPO.
Yeah.
I might be wrong on this. It's just so many, we have about 80 companies now.
Right.
But yeah, it's one of them actually that is more on the developer side of the mine rather than on the early exploration and discovery phase. But we like those too. You know, we think those are going to be profitable and not priced accordingly, we certainly get involved. So,
yeah. Well, and let's just kind of wrap up because again, it was just last Friday that I finally got to talk to Eric again. I joked with him, Tavi, that because he almost bought the whole island up there, we're going to call it New Sprotland rather than Newfoundland. and because I don't think there's really any public company up there that he doesn't own 19.99% of. So let's talk about it. I mean, like Newfound Gold is now up. I think it's almost, is it north of $1 billion in market cap, which is still not, I mean, compared to, you know, what Kirkland Lake has become, at 1.5 billion, but some of the others up there, Labrador has been rolling, but it's still just a couple hundred million, like Socomon's another one. It's like 100 million. Are there others up there that, again, if it develops into a region kind of like what where Kirkland Lake is, might really be onto something. Are there others you really like?
Well, look, we're actually just discussing this. You know, we're really thinking about what is the valuation, proper valuation for Newfound Gold, and it's going to be probably the most profitable North American deposit we're going to see in the following years. When you look at the Fosterville and how much they have created in values of going up in billions of dollars, even though after the announcement of the acquisition of the asset back in the days from Kirkland, which was seen as very negative by the market, by the way, at the time, you know, today, looking at Newfound Gold, there was a lot of skepticism coming into this discovery, by the way.
Yeah.
It still is. You know, it's a $1.5 billion market cap. So a lot of people think it's an expensive story. We think they're, you know, probably, you know, in our models here at Crescent, we think they're probably onto a potentially even a 10 million ounce deposit of gold and very, very profitable and much closer to surface than Fosterview, obviously. And so we think that it's a total company maker. There is a lot of opportunity for consolidating a lot of the other companies in the space, from Maritime that has a mill and already in production and in a very different stage than the Newfound Gold already with the discovery. And then you have Labrador as well, which is another interesting one, still very early compared to Newfound Gold, but already seeing a lot of signs that are very similar geologically speaking from New Farm Gold. New Farm Gold is, you know, is really three projects almost, and two of them are very well known, the Keats project and the Lodo. But there's mm-hmm. another one that is also and haven't really been drilled yet, or at least to the same level of this other two, that could potentially be also very attractive. And it does look like it's very attractive from some of the surveys we've seen so far. And so we're really excited about this. We think if you just compare that with other company makers, such as the Fosterville deposit for companies like Kirkland, look at the market cap for Kirkland Lake. I mean, that will give you the notion of where this company could really be. So I don't blame Eric for doing what he's doing. He's smart. He knows what he's doing. He knows he's probably onto something really profitable and a very good opportunity relative to a lot of places. And so we share the same opinion, and we came in a little bit earlier than him either. We think that he's going to kill it on this, and he already owns, as you know, about 20% of almost any company in this space. There's another one, Bona Vista, is a different geology, but it's another one in the region that we like. And some other companies too that we're getting involved. It's still in the private stage, not public yet, But yeah, that's just one of the regions that we at Crescent like. I mean, there's always a region that becomes sort of a popular one. Now we've seen Mexico become one of those, mm-hmm. or even some other areas like Colombia in the past are becoming very popular. But now maybe Newfoundland is one of them. But I urge a lot of people to also look at Finland. I know there's a lot of stuff going on there. There was a big sell-off in companies like Firefox because it's the numbers that we saw are not similar to the Rupert deposit that we have there as well. But I think, we could be looking at something very similar to a very, very high grade and narrow deposit that could be very profitable too, just as much as this discovery in the Newfound Gold company.
Avi, man, if we could just get moving up above 30 and, you know, back toward $2,000 gold, my God, we're going to have so much fun.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think we're headed towards that. You know, what I like the most, just a final thought, what I like the most about this thesis with gold and why it's such a great long-term investment are really those that are capable of performing under, you know, really opposing economic conditions and circumstances, you know, from a deflationary environment to an inflationary one. And I think this plethora of macro, fundamental, and even technical reasons, as you know, to buy gold today is what really makes us believe that we enter a secular bull market for precious metals. And this debt imbalances that we see globally growing at an unsustainable pace, especially since the pandemic started, I don't think are going to change. And so regardless of a declining money velocity, it doesn't really matter. I mean, everything, the macro imbalances point to the direction of investors hoarding tangible assets. And so gold and silver are probably investments that will do very well in today's macro setup. And we think that if you can get even a higher leverage from a price perspective by finding gold and silver in the ground, my goodness, that's probably the optimal solution here and implementation of that trade. So that's the way I'm focused on, and Crescent is focused on too, with the help of Quentin Haney, obviously.
And Tavi, tell everybody again, they go to the website or call you guys or fill out, if people are like listening to this going, yeah, you know what, I'd like to get involved either in a hedge fund or at a smaller level, what do they do?
So on a hedge fund, it's only for accredited investors, and mm-hmm. the difference of the hedge fund from the SMA is that the hedge fund participates in a lot of the private placements, and it's capable of negotiating discounts, getting warrants, and so forth. So it tends to perform better when things work out. That's only for accredited investors in institutions in general. The other one, the separate managed account, Precious Metals SMA is what we call, is really open for any investor on a minimum investment of about $25,000 would be able to participate in this strategy. It's a great one. We have most of the positions we have in the hedge funds we have in that strategy as well. And you can find it on our website, all the information with monthly performances and everything, really, from details of how the structure of the fund or the separate managed account works. In our website, there's a, you can look at fact sheets and performance reports right at the top of the website. But also, if you just want to contact us, you can also find a contact button there where you can message or email us and ask questions about any details you would like to know.
Again, we've been speaking with Tavi Costa. He is portfolio manager, Crescent Capital in Denver. I'm really glad I got to know. And Tavi, next time I'm in your part of the country, I'm definitely going to buy you the adult beverage of your choice for all the hard work you put in. And it's great. It's just great to visit with you. Thank you so much for all this information today. And let's make sure we talk again soon.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me, Craig.
From all of us here at TFMR, thank you for listening. We'll have another Thursday conversation next week.